You're listening to the Food Freedom Life Podcast. My name is Brittany Allison, and I spent 6+ years stuck in diet binge cycles, hating my body and envying others who seem to have it all because I never felt enough. What I discovered in my journey to food freedom and becoming a registered dietitian is this: you can either live your life at war with your mind or learn to work in sync with it. So if you're ready to learn how to be in tune with yourself and evolve your life, welcome to the show. Hello and welcome back. If this is your first time tuning in, I'm so glad to have you here listening to the Food Freedom Life podcast. If you've been here before, I'm grateful to have you joining me yet again to have another conversation about separating ourselves from diet culture, creating space from all the noise, and making our own decisions about how we feel and what we think once we have all the information that the diet culture we live in is withholding from us when it comes to health, fitness, exercise, all that good stuff. Because there really is so much out there that unfortunately is so diet culture oriented, and I feel like it's so important to share different perspectives, especially those that are based in educated opinions, based in research, so that you can more easily decide how you want to interact with all things nutrition, wellness, fitness, recovery, all that good stuff. On the podcast, I've talked before about how there are no good and bad foods. This idea of making all foods neutral and taking the quote unquote bad foods off the pedestal so you can feel more calm around them and make more mindful choices around what you want to eat based on how you actually feel instead of making these choices out of impulse because of a label and the scarcity mindset that it creates. And what I want to get into today is this question of, are there any foods that you actually should avoid? Are there any foods that are actually genuinely bad foods, foods that are bad for you that you should not eat and not have in your diet whatsoever? And I don't want you to think that I'm pulling the rug out from under you and being like, kidding, there are actually bad foods, here's what you need to avoid. That's so not the point of this. But I do want to get into some of the nuance on the foods that we eat, because it is very complex. It's not just as simple as this is bad, don't eat it. That's what we want to get away from. But I do want to give you some evidence-based information on foods that allows you to make informed decisions about how you want to eat, what you want to eat, how often you want to eat certain things in a way that just aligns with your value of health, not have you acting out of fear in the way that diet and wellness culture does. And so today I'm going to be answering the question of, if there are any foods that you actually should avoid, in a few different layers so that you can really understand for you what the answer to this question is, and then also objectively what the answer to this question is. And I'll put my personal opinion in on this as well. Before we dive into this, I do want to mention my most exciting offer that I've ever put together and made, the Empowered Eaters Collective. And you might be wondering what that is. It's a monthly membership that has daily prompts, weekly live coaching calls that are also all recorded. It has a private community support, new content every month, and access to my vault of courses, including my signature Food Freedom Forever course. I am going to be raising the price on August 1st. Initially, I said July 15th, but I decided to give you some more time to let you know about it. Currently, it's $37 a month, but it will be going up to $60 per month, so I wanted to let you guys know about it so you can lock in that lower price. The details will all be linked in the description, and you're going to want to sign up as soon as you can because you don't want to miss out. But now let's actually dive into the topic and answer the question that we are posing about whether or not there are foods that you should actually avoid. Now, I think I need to lay the foundation for this and first address what I was talking about a minute ago, and the fact that this kind of rests on the idea that there are healthy and unhealthy foods, or nutritious and not nutritious foods, or clean and unclean foods, however you want to say it, however you want to slice it. And I feel like for you to really understand this question, we first need to talk a little more about food neutrality and just make sure we are all on the same page about what that is and what that means. Food neutrality is this idea that we can view any and all foods from this middle ground where they're not good or bad, they're just neutral. I hate using part of the word in the definition, but that's the best way to describe it. It's taking a neutral viewpoint to all foods, no matter what they are. And I know you might be thinking, okay, but how can I be neutral to all foods? Aren't foods different? And the answer to that is yes. Food neutrality is in no way saying that a Twinkie and an apple are the same nutritionally or anything like that, because that's just not true and that doesn't make any sense and that's not helpful. They're not the same thing. They all have different nutritional compositions, they have different makeups, there's lots of different things that make these foods different. What food neutrality says is that we need to stop looking at food solely as good or bad, healthy or unhealthy, clean or unclean, because food is not just fuel. It's saying we need to acknowledge that food is so much more than just nourishment, and there are tons of different ways in which food can nourish us and fuel us outside of being just calories or energy or macros. Some of the different ways that food and drinks can nourish us is, of course, as fuel. We get energy from what we consume. We give our bodies vitamins and minerals and macronutrients that we need to create energy. But another important way is joy. From food, we also get connection, we get creativity, we get community, nostalgia, cultural experiences, and so much more. And you might be thinking, I don't know what that means. How can food nourish me in other ways other than fuel? So I wanted to give you some examples. But first, I wanted to start off with the specific examples of how food gives us fuel, because these are the things that we hear about more often, right? So an example of how food can give you fuel is you could be adding some extra veggies or fruits to your plate because you know they bring specific nutrients that are beneficial to your body. It could be adding carbohydrates to a meal because you know that that helps with energy, or having protein because that helps you feel fuller for longer. Or it could be an athlete using carbohydrates during a race to make sure they have the right energy reserves. There are a lot of different ways this can look. Those are just some examples. And those are things that you hear about a lot. We're very familiar with these examples of how food can fuel us and how food can nourish us, but we're not as familiar with the other examples that I mentioned, the emotional side of things, right? The joy, the creativity, the experience, the culture, all of that type of stuff. So I want to give you some examples of what this can look like. So for example, food can fuel you with joy, because when you have food that you love, it can bring up that emotion of happiness. This is 100% me getting ice cream. I love getting ice cream. My favorite is soft serve, and it's chocolate vanilla twist and then dipped. Extra points for that. I can't even express the amount of joy I experience in that moment. It's just so good. I freaking love it. I can't express how happy that makes me. And there are so many other examples like that. A food could be a cultural experience, you know, connecting you back to your culture and your family, right? Sharing that with loved ones that are connected with that as well. Food is an experience, you know, like when I go with my husband and we take our dog to the coffee shop on a Saturday morning and get a latte and a pastry and we sit outside and enjoy it and just chat. It's a whole experience and it's so special. And this is especially challenging in our society because things have come very health-centric and whitewashed in the messaging, where people almost feel as if their cultural foods or their emotional experiences with food aren't healthy and that we shouldn't be participating in that. And another example of this, just in general, is that food can fuel us through connection. Like what I was talking about, eating a baked good that somebody made you, or going out to a meal and having an experience with friends or with somebody else. All of these are different ways that food can nourish us outside of just being fuel. Because here's the truth, food has never only been just fuel for us as humans. That's what society and diet culture and the gurus online want you to believe, because it feeds into this narrative that fits our societal expectations, especially in North America. It fits this hustle and grind, capitalist, only do what's necessary, you don't need to have joy, you just need to grind towards your goals. It's a very production-focused way of thinking about food, and it has you focusing on just the necessities and income generation and surviving and grinding, but that's not how food is meant to exist. Our relationship with food is meant to be very multifaceted. And in order to have it be as healthy as possible, we need to have multiple different ways in which food contributes to our overall livelihood aside from fuel. And when we only focus on food as fuel, and this is something that I talk about so often with my clients, right? Because diet culture has us focus on food as fuel only. And when we focus on that and we ignore the emotional side of food, that's when we get really stuck in those all or nothing patterns with food, where we are focusing on food as fuel and it's just macros, it's points, it's calories, it's energy, it's carbs, it's protein, it's all these things, which absolutely it is, and I'm not denying that. But when we forget about the emotional and the creativity and the joy and the connection and the culture and all these really important parts of food, that's when we start flip-flopping back between binge and restrict, right? Restrict where we're food is fuel, and binge where we're food is emotion and I need comfort and I need joy and I need satisfaction from it. And we go back and forth. We need to embrace that emotional side of food. That's so important. And that's really what food neutrality has us gear our attention towards, is that food is not just fuel. Food is all of these really wonderful things, and we can be neutral about all foods and just not have this moral connection to good and bad, because we get things out of everything that we eat. So when I lay all these things out, you might be thinking to yourself, okay, well, how do I know how often food should fuel me versus give me experiences versus support my need to connect with my culture and other people? How do I balance all these things? The truth is that at different times in your life and over different weeks and different days, you're going to lean more into different areas of how food can support you. So as an example, let's say you're recovering from an illness. You're probably going to lean a lot more into fuel from food in that case, because you want to get better. You don't want to feel sick anymore. You need the food that you eat to nourish you. You might focus on that more. On the flip side, maybe you're on vacation. You're probably going to be focusing a lot more on experiences and connecting to the culture in whatever place you're at through food, right? It's not just as much of, oh, is this the perfect type of fuel or nourishment? And so you can see how these kinds of things will just fluctuate throughout your life. And even as you look at periods of time in your life, you may have times where you lean into certain things more, right? You can think back to when you've been super stressed and you are really maybe viewing food as fuel, just like, I need to make sure I eat, even if I don't know if I'm hungry or whatever it is. And there might be other times where maybe you're having a lot of fun with food and you're being really creative with it and you're trying new recipes and you're cooking a lot. And I can keep going on and on with this, but I think you get the gist of how there are all these different ways that food can support us from a non-diet perspective. And now that I've gone through that, you are probably still wondering, okay, but what's the answer to the question of, are there unhealthy foods that I should avoid? Now, here's the thing. The first piece to remember is that there are some foods and certain situations that nobody should eat food in, right? If you're allergic to a food, such as maybe if you have an anaphylactic allergy to it, or you have something like celiac disease, or you have some other allergy where you have a reaction to that food, you should not eat that. Of course, you're still allowed, like you're not gonna go to jail if you eat it, but should you? Probably not. And I don't like to throw around shoulds and shouldn'ts, but that one feels fair to me. Let's say you hate a certain food. Maybe that's another thing you shouldn't eat. Like if you hate fish or you hate avocado, again, I mean, you could eat it if you wanted to, you're allowed, but that's something I would say you absolutely don't need to. Another shouldn't is a food that is unsafe to eat. Maybe it's rotten, it's moldy, it's not safe, like raw chicken, for example. All of those obvious things are times where you shouldn't eat a food. And I think you guys should all know that, but I feel like I should just cover my bases. And at the end of the day, again, if you want to eat something you're allergic to, or you want to eat something moldy, or you want to eat something like raw chicken that's not food safe, be my guest. You have full permission. And I know that sounds weird, but I think it is so important to come from this position of permission always, because when we put foods off limits in a black and white way and we just say like, I cannot have this, and maybe this doesn't totally apply to like spoiled foods and rotten foods and whatever, because we're not gonna probably not binge on those things, but we want to always come from this place of permission with everything. Because when we approach food from a black and white way, where it's all or nothing, I cannot have this, it puts that food on a pedestal. And if you want to go back to last episode talking about food habituation, where we talk about taking food off the pedestal, putting food off limits, labeling it as bad, it makes it shiny and exciting. It makes you want it more. It makes it so that when you're around it, you can't stop thinking about it until you actually eat it. And then when you eat it, you feel like you've done something bad, that guilt comes in, and that's when you're so much more likely to say screw it and end up binging. We end up then restricting to try to make up for it, and we rebound, and then we restrict again, and we get stuck in that cycle. We get stuck on that hamster wheel of binge and restrict. And so we don't want to put food off limits. We don't want to say like, I absolutely cannot have this. I don't think that that's helpful. But outside of this, what's the answer to this question? Should you never eat certain foods? I'm going to give you the answer that you don't like first, but it's probably the answer that you are expecting from me at this point if you've been following me or listening to my podcast for any amount of time. And then I'm going to explain it and get into certain foods and certain additives. So just don't give up on me yet. The short and simple answer is that you have to figure it out for yourself based on your intuition, based on what's right for you, based on your values, whether or not there are certain foods that you want to stay away from. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about me and my journey to help you understand this more and how to make these decisions for yourself. So there were many years in my life where I was really restrictive in terms of what I would allow myself to eat. There were not very many foods that I deemed as good enough. And there were so many foods and ingredients that I didn't think were healthy enough for whatever reason that it may be. And I even went so far as to convince myself that I had intolerances to things like high sugar foods, bread, chocolate. I would get an upset stomach when I ate those foods, not because I actually had an intolerance, but because I gave myself so much anxiety around eating those foods that it actually created a physical reaction. And so let's fast forward to now in my life where all foods are on the table. And now, even though there are no foods that I won't eat, there are foods that I definitely eat more often than others. Mainly for me, it comes down to cost, availability, ease of making that food, enjoyment of that food. I also like to consider health too. So for example, I really enjoy having Greek yogurt and frozen fruit and granola for breakfast. It's inexpensive, it's easy to put together. Now that's not to say that if someone else was, you know, whipping up my breakfast and making me something different, I wouldn't eat it, but it's just something I eat often because of the convenience and I really genuinely enjoy it and look forward to it. I also eat chocolate often, and I have a stash of chocolate in the cupboard for when I want it. But on the flip side, I don't eat a lot of Skittles or candy because I'm not a huge candy fan. I'm a chocolate girl through and through to my core. Candy's just not my thing, and I know that, you know, eating candy super often is maybe not what my body would love, and so I just prioritize the things that I like more. And that's not saying that I won't eat it or I think it's bad. I definitely still enjoy it from time to time. It's just that I allow myself to be intuitive to what my preferences are. Now, simultaneously, there are certain times where maybe you might not eat certain foods as often, like if you're experiencing reflux and you want to get to the bottom of it, maybe you need to avoid acidic foods like coffee or tomatoes, but you're not eating them because they're acidic, not because they're bad. You might need to take a little bit of space for where your body is at. And that's the thing about developing intuition around your choices and what you want to include and maybe not include from your lifestyle and within your diet. And it'll probably fluctuate throughout the time depending on what you're going through. But what's tricky about it is, as you can see, there are times where maybe we're believing we're intuitive when we're actually being kind of restrictive or short-sighted around our choices. So in that first example, I told you guys from years ago, I genuinely thought I was, you know, listening to my body with these intolerances. But the thing is, I was creating those intolerances through such heightened stress, through obsession, and I was also very ingrained in my desire for control, as well as very rooted in diet culture and beliefs that had been instilled in me. And so then you might be wondering, well, how the heck do I determine whether or not I'm listening to my intuition with my preferences around food? And am I actually avoiding the food or eating the food more because it feels best for me? Am I doing it out of some underlying wound or fear or misguided mindset? That really comes down to getting in tune with yourself and where you're at in your relationship with your body and with food. So what I would say will help you determine whether or not the way you're interacting with food is actually beneficial to you is by, number one, befriending your body and building and healing your relationship with food back to a healthy place. And then from that point, continually utilizing self-inquisition, getting curious to determine what works for you from moment to moment as your life changes, as you age, as things come up. And if you're feeling like, well, how the heck do I do that? I'll give you a couple starting points, but also I will say that the Empowered Eaters Collective will really help you lay the groundwork to do exactly this, and it's going to be so transformative. So if this is resonating with you, again, check that out in the description. So how do you build this awareness? We need to start asking questions around why you're making the choices you're making now, why you have the beliefs that you hold, what your version and idea of health is, like what's your definition of health? Building an awareness around where you're at, and then we need to work on tuning out the diet culture noise from there. So if you detect areas where you might notice diet culture or notice some limiting beliefs coming up within your thoughts, that's a really good thing to pinpoint and start with. And then you might want to implement some structure and some habits that actually help you to combat the things that are not supporting you and helping you build towards a relationship with food that you actually want. So for example, you might recognize that you have some kind of obsessive wellness tendency, so you think you need to avoid sugar. But actually, maybe that's influenced by the fact that you're very much afraid of sugar being unhealthy or being addictive, right? And so we need to first be aware of the fact that you have this fear of sugar. Second, we need to understand what created it, both personally from other people taking it in and talking to you externally from things you see in diet culture, and then work on unlearning those things. So listening to podcasts like the one I have on why sugar isn't addictive, and then implementing things to help you restructure your relationship through building goals and habits, breaking that fear of sugar. And from that place where you have broken that fear of sugar, that's where you can actually look at your value of health, if that is in fact a value to you, and determine, how do I want to uphold that value? Does that mean I want to choose to, you know, only focus on having foods that are higher in sugar that I really genuinely enjoy? Like, again, maybe Skittles I'm not a super huge fan of, and so I'm just not even going to bother buying those or having those if they're offered to me. Maybe I like have a couple, but I don't, you know, have a whole bowl of them because they're not really my favorite. But maybe I, you know, buy a bar of chocolate and I keep it in the pantry. And if I feel like I want some, then I have however much of it I want. When I really feel like it, I super enjoy it, and then I just move on after. But you know, I try not to have it every single day. I have it like a couple days a week or whatever it may be, and I just don't think about it too much. Maybe that's how you want to, you know, use that better relationship with sugar that you have created. But again, circling back to our question, for me, my answer to are there foods that I absolutely should avoid, my answer would be no. I truly believe that I want to be able to eat every single food because I feel it's very beneficial for me. I want to be able to, you know, go to a friend's place and eat anything they're serving. I want to be able to go out to eat at any time and not have any food restrictions. Now, I know I'm very blessed because I don't have any allergies or anything like that, so I recognize that I'm very lucky in that case to be able to even make that choice. And I believe that for me, I feel my best when I just have the ability to tune into myself and listen to what my body is communicating to me from a place of how it feels, my values, not from that place of restriction. And I know that that can feel far off, but hopefully you feel like as I've gone through some of this episode, it feels a little bit more demystified in terms of how you would reach this and how you would go about this. And now I think where people get a little tripped up is they can kind of answer this question for themselves and decide that there are certain foods I don't think I should eat. And I'm going to use seed oils and Red 40 as examples because I see them a lot. So there's some people that really firmly believe they don't want to have Red 40 or they don't want their kids to have Red 40, which is a food dye. And now I'm not here to say that that's the right or wrong choice. And what I will say is I think the question is to ask yourself, then in this case, how far do you want to take something like that, right? We've heard that Red 40 or seed oils are not good for you. You get to decide what to do with that information. But again, personally, I don't think it's helpful to create a 100% black and white restriction, but go with me in this example. So with Red 40, maybe you choose within your home to not have foods or make things that incorporate that additive if you have the luxury and the privilege to do that, because I think it's really important to note that being able to make these choices around food and buy foods without this is a luxury. It shows that you have the income and the ability to do that. I mean, there's no reason to feel bad about that. I just want to point that out, that not everybody gets this choice, and it's a very lucky choice to be able to make. But how far do you want to take that, right? Do you want to go to a friend's house and say, oh no, I can't have those certain foods? Or with your kids, if they go to like a friend's birthday party and you say they can't have any foods with Red 40 and you tell the parents that, are you then comfortable with the impact that that can have on their relationships, especially with the research that shows that, you know, the more parents restrict their kids, if they restrict their kids heavily, especially in social environments, it can damage their sense of connection, their ability to experience, and it increases the risk for disordered eating and eating disorders. Again, I don't want to say what you should or shouldn't do, but it's important to keep these things in mind. Now, similarly, let's go with seed oils. Maybe you've seen a lot of videos online about how toxic and inflammatory seed oils for you, and so you feel very afraid to eat seed oils. So maybe in your home you choose not to cook with seed oils, but at the same time, if you go out to eat and there's something that's cooked in seed oils or you don't know what it's cooked in, do you want it to be that you can't go out to eat with people, or you feel stressed about choosing what you're going to have? You can't experience the foods that others are having just for the seed oils. Yeah, and keep in mind that the increased stress that you experience from restriction, that restriction that you're creating within yourself, it also has an effect on your body and on your mental, physical, and emotional state. But we often undermine how much our holistic experience affects us, especially with how much stress affects our health. And there's so much online too about how, you know, ingredients are banned in Europe, and therefore in the US or in Canada, they're purposely poisoning people. If something's banned, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's unsafe, but the narrative is always in that direction. There are many ingredients that are banned in the US or in Canada that are still allowed in Europe, and that doesn't mean that they're unsafe. We have very similar regulatory processes, but there are differences, which can allow for one country to ban something and another country to not. But overall, you know, both Europe and North America have very safe food. But then, you know, you see this person on TikTok that'll make videos where they say something is banned, and it's like additives are labeled differently in Europe. They use EA numbers, so it's not even necessarily that they're banned. A lot of the times, you know, people do side-by-side comparisons of ingredients of UK versus US or Canada, and we label things differently in North America. Like high fructose corn syrup is labeled as glucose fructose syrup, and people think, oh, it's not in there. And it's like, no, it is in there. It's just labeled differently. So a lot of the times too, they're very similar ingredients, but they're just different labeling regulations. So it might look different. Or as an example, you know, one of those premier protein drinks, half the ingredients list is vitamins and minerals, but they're listed out in the chemical names. And so they look scary. It's like, oh my God, look at all the ingredients that I can't pronounce, but they're literally vitamins and minerals. So it's not necessarily a bad thing that they're in there. Or another example, if we were to break down a banana into the chemical compounds, most people would not be able to pronounce half the chemical compounds that are in there. And that doesn't mean obviously that bananas are bad for you. It's just that a lot of food rules around if you can't pronounce it, you need to avoid it, or it's bad for you, they really go back to this idea that familiar feels safe. But just because you might not be familiar with an ingredient, or you might not be able to pronounce it, it has no bearing on its safety or its nutrition. It's just a nonsense rule that doesn't make any sense. And it all just comes back to, again, making decisions about food from a place of empowerment, from a place of what is my value, what makes sense for me, and how do I want to maybe implement making healthier choices or choosing to not have certain things from a place of abundance instead of restriction, right? Making it that choice from a place of I can still have this, but I've, you know, read a lot on why this is maybe not the healthiest thing for me, and so I want to choose to not have that most of the time, but I'm still going to allow myself to have it once in a while or in certain situations because that doesn't feel restrictive to me, and I know that having it once in a while or having it, you know, a couple times a week or whatever it may be is not going to make or break my health or give me cancer or anything like that. So I want to go through another personal example and use red meat and kind of how I navigate that. So more recently, it came out that in large population studies, greater red meat consumption has been associated with higher risk of colorectal cancer. Looking into that, studies were not consistent, but it led the IARC, which is the International Agency for Research on Cancer, their working group to conclude that red meat is probably carcinogenic. The IARC identifies hazards, which means whether an agent, you know, a compound, whatever it is, can cause cancer, but they don't assess the level of risk. And so they put red meat in the same category as smoking, which is a group 1 carcinogen, but the level of risk with smoking is much higher, about 2,000% increased risk for lung cancer from smoking, from that associated with red meat and processed meat. But of course, all of the articles out there and people talking about it are like, oh my God, eating red meat, eating processed meat is just as bad as smoking, you should avoid it, blah, blah, blah. There is data out there that says that eating red meat and processed meat does increase risk of colon cancer and some other cancers. And that is something for me that I'm like, hey, I love red meat, but I love other proteins too. And so I feel for me that it is possible to reduce the amount that I eat without it feeling restrictive, because there are plenty of other options out there that I enjoy just as much. And so the way that I go about this with like meal planning and figuring out what to eat for the week is, one, I try to buy nitrate-free deli meat, because I still do really love deli meat, and I know that processed meat is, you know, falls under that category of increasing cancer risk, but I really love deli meat, and so I try to buy the nitrate-free, because nitrates, which are part of the meat curing process, can lead to the formation of potentially cancer-causing chemicals in the body. And so I try to look for nitrate-free deli meat, but I still do eat that every week. And then in terms of planning dinners, I kind of think like, okay, what are we going to eat for dinner this week? I kind of want this. Oh, right, this has red meat in it. We always make a meal for two nights. So if we're going to have one meal with red meat, try to make sure the other meal does not have red meat. And then the following week, not that I'm like, oh, we can't have anything that has red meat, but I just try to find other options that have, you know, turkey or chicken or fish or tofu or like legume based or that kind of thing, and alternate weeks when we're having something that has red meat versus not. But sometimes we have like 2 weeks in a row that have red meat, and sometimes we have all of our meals throughout a week that have red meat. And then if I go out on the weekend for dinner, if we order takeout, that's not really something that I'm thinking about, like, oh, is there red meat or not? It's more just in the meals that we make and the foods that we prepare, the groceries that we get, can we find other options that are leaner meats and that kind of thing. So that's kind of how I go about it, and I never come at it from a restrictive perspective. Again, I'm not like, I can never have this because I really enjoy beef and pork and that kind of thing. It's just something that I take into consideration when doing the meal planning for the week. And that's what really works for us. That feels good for me. It doesn't feel restrictive. It feels like, hey, I'm honoring my health, I'm doing something good, but I'm still eating all the foods that I enjoy. So that's kind of a personal example of that. And this really does not feel stressful at all. And we know that, number one, having connections to others and experiences and having joy is very important for living your healthiest life. And number two, we know that being in high amounts of stress is often very negative for one's health. So again, you always have to ask yourself, what am I trying to achieve with something like avoiding this food or this food additive in every single circumstance? And is it more beneficial for me to restrict this food than it is to just be able to have it, even if I choose maybe not to have it in other circumstances? So the answer to this question, it's going to be different for every single person, and that's really what it comes down to. There's no right or wrong, but I do want you to ask yourself, circling all the way back to the beginning, why are you asking yourself this question? Do you want to be healthy? Do you want to be in a smaller body? Are you in this pursuit of something specific? And does avoiding all things or obsessing about this actually support your end goal? If you want to be healthy, but like I was just saying, your obsession with avoiding certain foods is negatively affecting you to the point where you're increasing your stress, you're not able to connect with other people, etc., is that really benefiting you still? If you're wanting to be in a smaller body and you're avoiding these foods, but you're noticing how much it decreases your joy and you ultimately really don't feel your best, or maybe you end up binging on those foods or binging on other foods because you're feeling so restricted and so unsatisfied, is that really achieving the end goal of what you want from that, which is maybe more enjoyment, more confidence, more happiness in life? I could use a lot of examples of this, but I think my main point in asking that final question is, what I always encourage is coming back to the core reason as to why you're doing something, why you're making a certain choice, why you're asking yourself something, why you're pondering something, and then evaluating if you're actually supporting that through your choices and what ends up happening, right? What's the expectation versus the reality? Let's take a step back and look at that. That's all we have for today. Thank you so much for joining me in this episode. I know this was a lot, so please let me know what you think. If you have any questions, feel free to DM me on Instagram at The Food Freedom Life. And I really hope you enjoyed this and that you feel like you gained something from it. If you did, I would love to have you leave a rating or a review. Just let me know in the DMs what you thought about this episode. All of this really supports me and the show when you leave any type of feedback. And if you have an episode idea that you want to see, just know that you can always reach out to me to request that and just share that with me. But again, thank you for joining me in this episode of the Food Freedom Life podcast, and I will see you again in a couple weeks. Bye.